Spider-Man's a superhero that's been played by multiple actors on the big screen. Many agree that Tom Holland has fit the role perfectly, but what about Tobey Maguire? Like him or hate him, he played Peter Parker in the first trilogy that began in 2002 and ended in 2007. Given the evolution of Spider-Man and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is the original Spider-Man trilogy still great and worth watching? We're going to be reviewing each individual movie right here on A Cast of the Past because we realize that even though we love to watch a lot of great movies, sometimes we don't get to the sequels till a lot longer, you know, when we go down the line. But being able to review an entire trilogy where we give everybody a chance to watch each one time a month, it gives us a chance to really relive this. And thinking about Spider-Man, think about the MCU, and now with Tom Holland, we got the Into the Spider-Verse movie, so whatever you're watching, it almost feels like Tobey Maguire and that Spider-Man trilogy became irrelevant. So we're going to be talking about that right here with yours truly, Juan Velez from San Juan, Puerto Rico. Joining me from Boston, Massachusetts, we have Ryan McNulty. Now, Ryan, considering this movie came out in 2002, were you a big fan of superhero movies in the early 2000s?
I was, for the most part. I wasn't a diehard where I was seeing every single one, but I definitely saw most of them, you know, whether it be the X-Men movies, that 2003 Hulk. Oh, that was a winner for sure. But I did see pretty much every Spider-Man movie when it came out. So I was pretty into the superhero movies during this time.
We also have from London, Ontario, Keith Poshick. Same thing, man.
Hi.
We're talking about that because we have the original X-Men movie from the initial movies that came out in 2000. In 2005, we had Fantastic Four. In 2005, going over to the DC side of things, we had the first Batman movie with Christian Bale. So were you a big fan of superhero movies at that time?
Definitely not to the degree that I am post-MCU, but I was more on the DC side of things, like the original Batmans. I'll try not to lose my voice here. The original Batmans, like going back all the way to the original one with Jack Nicholson. I really enjoyed those movies a lot, but never really messed with any of the Marvel stuff. Like, I didn't see the X-Men movies until years later. I don't think I've seen the Fantastic Four movies at all to this day. But
you're
Spider-Man.
Okay. You're okay without that.
Yeah, I was kind of where much I land. They're not worth it.
Mm-hmm. But Spider-Man was the first Marvel movie that I really got into. And here's a fun fact. Spider-Man was also the first DVD I ever owned. So it has a very special place in my heart because of that.
Interesting. In
Do
my
you still
case,
own it?
Oh,
probably.
That's a good question.
I think it's in a box in my parents' basement, but I think I do.
Well, maybe look for it, Keith. Maybe you can sell that on eBay or something. But in my case, I was a big fan of the X-Men animated series growing up, so I was super excited when we got to see X-Men there. But I was let down by those movies because they had the generic, you know, black outfits. I think they sacrificed way too many things for the big screen. Now, when talking about Spider-Man, when we first saw the costume, I was like, yes, like this is going to be a thing. But then when you talk about Tobey Maguire and everything like that, I think that the initial 2000s was a great chance to see the character on screen, but the actors that portrayed them were not necessarily the same. I mean, think about the fact that when we talk about Fantastic Four, we have an actor there that later became Captain America, right? Which is
That's
weird
true.
To think about. But it's those little things that we have to consider. And for everybody watching and listening, remember that we do publish a brand new episode every Sunday, and if you enjoy the podcast, consider leaving a 5-star review, whether it be on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Facebook. Even Facebook, you can leave reviews. That makes Keith really happy, and really
it
that's
does.
The goal of the podcast. It's to have him have a big smile in his face, but this is going to be a trilogy review. So like I mentioned, every month, so we're starting this now at the end of the summer or midsummer, depending where you live. So in 3 months' time, you will have gotten the entire Spider-Man trilogy review. And then we hope to answer the question that after watching all of them, especially knowing the fact that the third one is not all that, people don't think about it fondly. Is it worth watching? We're going to be talking about that. But first, starting with Ryan, where does Spider-Man rank among your favorite superheroes? Whether it be video games, movies, or TV.
Spider-Man is definitely up there for me. And this this series honestly has a lot to do with why that is. Before this movie, really all I, besides just knowing of Spider-Man just due to pop culture, I really was only familiar with the cartoon show, the animated series. And even then, I really only had seen a couple episodes. So before this series of movies, I didn't know about most of the villains and stuff, but Spider-Man's one of my favorites just because he's a kid, right? And he's more relatable for someone who's younger, where it's, oh man, you're just this regular kid and you got these powers and how do you deal with that? It's a lot more relatable than, say, like a Superman or even a Batman, as much as I love Batman.
Exactly, because who has Batman money? Nobody. But yeah, I'm right there with you, where Spider-Man is definitely high up there, mostly because he doesn't take it too seriously, or whenever there's a Spider-Man thing that's out there, it's never too serious. Like, even though I love the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight trilogy, it's very dark. It's very take itself seriously, kind of depressing. But with Spider-Man, it's just fun. It really encapsulates the feel that Marvel goes for with their movies for the most part, where it's fun, there's action, you're going to have a good time. It's like a thrill ride of a movie.
Yeah, I always like to think of Spider-Man like a humble Iron Man, because both of them are smart, but they're also incredibly charismatic. I think that this first Spider-Man was maybe a lot more on the clunkier side, but as time goes by, he does have that charm, right? But unlike Tony Stark, he's not a millionaire, so he's still like the person that's trying to go out there and make it into the world, despite the fact that he's a superhero. You know, he doesn't let that get to his head, you know, where Tony Stark is like super, hey, look at all the money that I have, look at my brain, look at the technology that I've created. So I think that Spider-Man, what became a really big deal for me, kind of like you, Ryan, with the animated series. And I think that whether you talk about the Batman animated series, Superman, Spider-Man, that's where a lot of us in the 90s really began to know these characters, because obviously there's bound to be differences between the comic books, the TV shows, and the movies. So I know that the three of us, we're never going to be experts on the comic book side of things. And even with this movie, Sam Raimi made a drastic change that some people often complain about, which is, you know, Spider-Man in most of the movies and things like that, the spider webs come from things that he created that are manufactured. But in this movie, they scrapped that. So from the moment that he was bitten, oh, you can just magically, you know, fling out spider webs. Which, Keith, aren't you afraid of spiders?
Yes and no. Anything that's bigger than my hand, I'm afraid of.
When it comes to spiders. So are you afraid of Tobey Maguire?
I guess so. By that logic, Tobey Maguire is much bigger than my hand, so I would be afraid of him, yes.
But Ant-Man's cool.
Yeah, Ant-Man's cool. Yeah. What's an ant ever done?
Exactly. Except, really, that, like...
That's the question we're here important. To answer today.
Hey, he saved the cinematic universe in many ways, but...
Actually, for real, ants are terrifying. There's this episode of CSI that, like, haunts me to this day that involves ants that I don't know if I can, like... I don't mess with ants anymore because of it. One of them got, like, locked in a casket, and, like, ants... And they got buried alive, and ants started eating them. It was a bad episode.
Wow.
CSI is a... terrible, great show. Anyway, let's talk about Spider-Man.
I need to watch that, but going back to 2002, let's just once again reconfirm that before the MCU, there's just not that much to really think about. Like, hey, who can I compare this to? There's really not much. And unlike other superhero movies, Spider-Man has a heavy emphasis on the CGI, rather like the animated graphics, because even Batman, you know, with Batman Begins in 2005, obviously, some things are going to be, you know, digitized, but he doesn't fly. Spider-Man moves around. He's super agile. So when talking about Spider-Man and finding out that Tobey Maguire is going to play the character, is he somebody that you look at and go, when I think of Spider-Man, I think of Tobey Maguire? Or is that something that needed to marinate a little bit for you guys before you warmed up to him?
Maybe because of how much I enjoyed the movie itself, to this day, I still imagine Tobey Maguire when I think of Spider-Man. It's nothing against Tom Holland, but to me, that's what Peter Parker looks like, Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, for a while, when I thought of Spider-Man, I also thought of Tobey Maguire. And that's really pretty much comes down to when I was at this age, my, you know, my investment in superheroes was not super high, and I was willing to just go with whatever the movie was putting out, essentially. I wasn't thinking about, you know, things from the comics or things from the animated series that weren't going to translate, or worrying about casting. You know, this came out quite a while ago, so almost 20 years ago at this point. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I was pretty young, and I was just like, oh, cool, Spider-Man. I can't wait to see that movie. You know, casting is something I think about a lot more now for upcoming movies, but then I didn't really think about it. So, you know, years later, when you look back and you're like, oh, man, everyone's like 35 and in high school in this movie. You know, it's not really, you know, you weren't thinking about that then.
Exactly.
That's maybe one of my biggest pet peeves in movies. Like, some of the bullies in this, I'm like, dude, you look my age now, and I'm almost 30. It's really hard to take them seriously. I know it's like a small thing to complain about. You know, we reviewed Breakfast
Club. No, that's not a small thing. I think that deserves the proper weight, where there is an aspect of casting. Because, face it, if they did something like that today, a Marvel movie would get ripped apart if it wasn't making jest of a situation like that. So I do think you have to put some weight on it. Proper casting is an important thing in movies. And if you're... bully, your high school bully, like, has a full beard, I think that's an issue in some degree.
And I think that's something that movies overall have just gotten a lot better about. And, you know, it's probably some of that had to do with people just don't want to have to deal with, like, younger actors as much. It's harder to find, you know, child actors and stuff like that. It's a lot harder to cast, I think. So, coming down to, they could just cast some people who had a lot of experience in movies, and they know that they could perform. I mean, arguably, we'll talk about that later, but yeah, nowadays it feels, even if the people are older, you look at a lot of these movies, and when it's a movie taking place in high school, the people see it, it's believable that they are actually in high school.
And I think you two bring up an excellent point, which is, I think it's just that the overall standard quality of comic book movies just kept going up and up and up. Even today, when you talk about video game movies, you can get away with a very mediocre casting because the expectation is it's going to be an okay movie. But because when you think of Captain America, now you think about an actor, you think about a cast. It's no longer just about, you know, the comic book character brought to the TV. Even when Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 came out, and that doesn't have the same, you know, actors in the video game, people are like, hey, where's Chris Evans? Where's, you know, Robert Downey Jr.? But the 90s gave us, like, you know, so many different Batman, so many people that it's just like, whatever, we just need somebody to fill that hole. But then when you talk about this movie, this was the origin story of Spider-Man, where, you know, modern movies completely just forget about this part, because it's like, you know what happens with great power comes great responsibility. But this was the movie that they laid the foundation for much of the other ones, which is still weird to think about, that the other ones forget about the origin story, and they kind of just assume, hey, watch like the first 30 minutes of this one, and then just watch the other ones, right?
It is a really weird dynamic.
Yeah, I was going to say, that decision is like, you have to read the room, essentially, right? So when we look at the new Spider-Man, when we look at Tom Holland's Spider-Man, they didn't do the origin story because we had not only this trilogy, but we had two other Spider-Man movies. So they realized that there was a little bit of fatigue, and we've seen a plenty of origin stories with many other superheroes. So it's just a situation, you know, making a call just on the reading the current climate of the viewing audience and realizing, hey, we don't need another origin story. But this being the first Spider-Man movie, you know, it obviously needs one.
So then going through the summarized version of the origin story. So we have Peter Parker. Mary Jane is his neighbor. He's very awkward. And the first 30 minutes, either Tobey Maguire is naturally awkward, or he does an excellent job. It's just like these awkward silences. But you get the fact that this is somebody that is an outcast. Even when he gets inside the school bus, even the nerds are like, hey, I don't want to sit beside you. They go to this exhibition of different spiders. He gets bitten, goes home. he collapses, and then he wakes up.
Well, first he gets a six-pack.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's when he wakes up.
We're not promoting everybody just randomly being bitten by spiders, because you're not going to get six-packs, okay? It's a movie we're talking about here. But from not needing glasses to having all this agility, which is, like, the one weird part is, like, once he gets, like, the six-pack and he's, like, all muscled up, he goes downstairs, but, like, wall runs, which is just, like, you just got this. Like, how do you know you can do stuff like that, right? What did you think about the quick elements of you go from a nobody to now he's got those different abilities just out of a spider bite, and you saw it in this movie?
I mean, it's classic origin story 101 stuff, and I do like that they took it slow in the way that, like, yes, now he has a six-pack, and now he can wall run, and he doesn't need glasses, but he's still the same nerdy Peter Parker when he went to school. Yeah, he can basically do the Matrix inside of a fight in a hallway, but everybody still looked at him like a freak. He's just a different kind of freak now.
Yeah, they didn't, it's not like he got the powers and he's like, hey, guess what? I'm going to be a superhero now. How they got there, I thought was done in a very good way.
And Keith, you mentioned Matrix. I was talking about this with my wife while watching the movie. I think you can make a lot of comparisons to a Neo and Peter Parker, not just in the slow motion, you know, going back to the Matrix, which we did review that movie. You can check it out in the archives, but you also had the part where Neo tried to make the super leap, right? And then he fails, but Spider-Man is trying to have a spider sling. So you have those different things of, I know I'm powerful, I know I'm strong, but as you mentioned, he's still discovering that.
And so I know knowing, Kung Fu.
I know Kung Fu. I wish I knew Kung Fu, but knowing that this became a trilogy, in your case, Ryan, did you like the fact that, as Keith mentioned, they took their time? They're trying to get you, I guess, more familiarized, more than knowing about Spider-Man. I think they really wanted you to get warmed up to Tobey Maguire. You're going to see this guy a lot on the big screen. So here's your chance to really get to know the actor and the character.
Yeah, I think they paced out this movie pretty well. It did feel like it ran a little long, but I felt how they, you know, each beat and how they got there in the story, it didn't feel rushed. It felt pretty natural. So just talking about how they laid that out, I think that was well done.
Mm-hmm. Because even though it does move at a bit of a slower pace, even or especially in the beginning of it.
Especially those credits, man.
Oh,
those
opening
credits.
Good Lord. Holy crap. That was like that, 5 minutes long.
That was long.
It's like, it's one thing. It's like, show us something interesting. All right. It was literally, they weren't showing you anything but like black web and text.
Mm-hmm. That was and thing then in sometimes the it was a red though, web. Right? And then here's a blue web because that's Spider-Man, red or blue. Yeah, that was fairly common in the early 2000s. And with the exception of that opening credits scene, things do move in that movie at a pretty reasonable pace. You're never really feeling like the movie's dragging. Even though it is a bit long and you can argue that things should have gotten cut, it's not like it dragged.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And then another part of the movie that we don't really get to see with the later ones is that relationship with, you know, Aunt May and everybody else, you know, what happens with the thievery. And we are going to get to talking about Bonesaw because we're fans of professional wrestling. So
Bonesaw is ready.
I think that this movie, how old were we in 2002?
I would have been 12.
So I would have been 13. Like 13. Give or take. We met. Okay. I was 12. I was 12 because we met each other in 2004 and I was 14 then. I must have been 12. So I think this movie was incredibly influential because of the wrestling part, because it's like, hey, we're wrestling fans. Here's freaking Macho Man in a wrestling ring wrestling against Spider-Man. What part of that is not freaking awesome? Especially when, like, Macho Man in 2002. He passed away in 2011, right? So that happened many years later. But still, like, Macho Man was not exactly super active in the world of wrestling yet. Here he is, Bonesaw.
He was Bonesaw, like, he jumped off the top rope and did an elbow. That was super the Macho Man Randy Savage right there. And I want your guys' opinion on this because I've been struggling with it ever since I rewatched this movie. Was Randy's body CGI'd, or is it believable that that was actually just a gassed up Macho Man Randy Savage? Because I feel like it could go either way.
That
and
had
I'd
to
believe
be gassed
it.
Up.
That, you think so?
Yeah.
But was it could have been CGI?
I don't know. I found it believable. But I don't know. I feel like 2002 CGI, could it be that well done? Because if it was CGI, yeah, it was not at all noticeable.
That's true. Say, so it was probably just super steroided Macho Man.
Even though I was a wrestling fan at the time, I was probably only a wrestling fan for about a year and a half by this point. I had no idea that that was the Macho Man because I'd never watched Shame. WCW or early WWE.
So many people are crying right now.
I know. Uh-huh.
And I'm just so grateful the Macho Man was in this movie because we got a rap song out of it pretty much. And it just makes me so happy. If you haven't heard the Macho Man rapping, you need to stop this show. Come back, of course, and listen to Be a Man Hulk by Randy Savage. It'll change your life.
So while we're talking about this part with Bonesaw and everything, what did you guys think about the fact that once he figured out he had the super abilities and he can make a little bit of money wrestling and doing things like that, he's not the one that comes up with the name Spider-Man. So he has a bunch of designs, but has just like the simple shirt type outfit and things like that. And then Bruce Campbell, you know, he makes a cameo in this part of the movie, asks him, you know, what's my name? Human Spider. He thinks it's crappy. So the announcer calls him the Amazing Spider-Man. I love that because in the world of professional wrestling, you have to have a super over-the-top name, right?
That's
so
good,
it's not
shit,
just Spider-Man.
Pal.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I thought that was an incredibly natural way of introducing the character. What about you guys?
Yeah, I thought it was perfect because it, again, it goes to the entire Peter Parker being a giant nerd where he wasn't able to come up with that fun name on his own. He was given this great name of the Amazing Spider-Man and he resisted it. He's like, oh, actually, no, I'm the Human Spider. It's just those things in the movie that built up a great origin story.
Yeah, it also just aligns with the wrestling with, hey, this is your name now. You don't really get a say in it.
Exactly. And then something that happens with this, I want to talk about the family. So, you know, Peter Parker grows up with his aunt and uncle. And then after this, he went into the wrestling match because he was supposed to get $3,000. But because he finished beforehand, he only gets about $100-$200.
Guy
Classic comes
in. Wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. He gets promoted. They did a really good job in a short amount of time. Yeah. I think this is the prelude to the wrestler. But a guy comes in to steal, and I really like this part of the movie. I think this is the more realistic part of it, right? Where somebody goes to rob the owner of the company, but then Peter goes, hey, if he didn't care about me, why should I care about stopping the robber? And even he says, you know, tells the owners like, hey, it's not my problem. But then once he leaves the building, he sees that the person that robbed the place is the one that killed his uncle. So what better motivation? And you're directly responsible. Like, he can guess that that was going to happen, right? But he could have prevented that. What did you think about that? When most superhero movies, I guess Batman, you know, is a similar example of like the parents dying. Here we have another family loss. What do you think about this one?
This is one of like the highlights of the movie for me. And I think it's what really stuck. And just the fact that Spider-Man, well, Tobey Maguire and Uncle Ben, they leave on a bad note when he's dropping him off. So they just have this fight. And then the next thing you know, a decision that, you know, Peter Parker makes directly impacts him, like a selfish decision basically impacts him. And kills his uncle, who just said some dank wisdom of with great power comes great responsibility.
The dankest wisdom, really.
It's so memorable that even though they don't say it like in any of the new movies, like you still hear people talking, like saying that line all the time. That selfish decision is just a very powerful way of like inspiring him to help other people because like he's paying for his mistake and his uncle gave him this wisdom and he just basically was partly responsible for the death of his uncle and the fact that it's like now this is a life-changing moment for him and it's the best part of maybe the entire trilogy in my opinion.
I have to agree with that. It's so powerful that the entire, like, a giant chunk of Spider-Man's character is that phrase, with great power comes great responsibility. And I think they did it very, very well in this movie. Not great, very well.
Which brings up another thing. When you talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and we talked about this in the Captain America First Avenger movie review, also available in the archive, where those movies have a style. It seems like no matter how serious it gets, from the camera shots to the dialogue, they seem to be a lot more jokey, with the exception of the Captain America movies. But this, I thought it was more of a movie about the discovery of a young boy becoming a superhero, and it happens to have Spider-Man inside of it. But a lot of the camera shots, a lot of the music, aside from like the obvious like superhero music and the intro, most of the music I associated with movies focused on drama or comedy in different parts. And I think it's also like a thing of the early 2000s that a lot of that stuff doesn't necessarily happen now. So what do you think about the overall tone, knowing that later on we got the Andrew Garfield, you know, the two movies that everybody forgets about, and then we have like a completely super charismatic, you know, tone because of a guy like Tom Holland, but then you bring him back to Tobey Maguire. What do you think of this one?
As far as the tone goes from a music standpoint, it was one of my favorite things of this movie, and I think it was just so well done, because those two words you mentioned are the perfect way to summarize them, comedic and drama. But at the beginning of the movie, it leans more on the comedic side. That's when you have that comedy, that funny stuff, the close, awkward camera shots of Peter Parker. And as he slowly becomes Spider-Man and he slowly has this responsibility put on him, that's when it becomes more dramatic. There's a very, very subtle shift throughout the movie, and I just think they nailed that. I loved it so much.
So are we talking like overall movie tone? I just want to be clear.
Yeah, starting with music, but then moving on to the overall tone.
I mean, I think the music's great, but I think the tone of the movie, it's a little weird, because the awkward parts, like, they just feel awkward, and it doesn't make Peter Parker more charming or more likable or relatable. Like, sometimes just the dialogue between, like, the tone in the dialogue between Peter Parker and Mary Jane is just, like, uncomfortably awkward.
But that's the point of it.
I think they did it too much. I think it's like whenever you have a really good joke, but then you keep going with the joke and it stops being funny. I thought it was like that with this movie, where it's like, okay, I already get it. You're awkward. I mean, this movie is pretty long. This is not an hour, 10-minute movie. I think if you chopped it down like 10, 20 minutes, I would think differently about that, but I can see where Ryan comes from, right?
Yeah, I'm just saying that usually when you have awkward scenes, you're supposed to, like, there's supposed to be some sort of, like, misunderstanding, which, you know, they do in the dialogue, but you're supposed to kind of come away understanding the characters and where they're coming from and being like, oh, okay, like, it was just an awkward moment, but you like them more, where it's just like, oh, that was kind of like, I'm not really warming up to Peter Parker more after this scene. I was just like, oh, that just felt awkward and weird.
I think that one of the main parts of the movie that really made me think that Tobey Maguire, I know that people definitely still have this ongoing debate about Tom Holland and Tobey Maguire, and I feel like as we review, especially the second movie, I think we can go back to this conversation. I think the third one is just naturally just going to drastically fall apart, but there is this one part where, you know, he saves Mary Jane, and we're going to go back, but it has to do with this part. But for whatever reason, he's got the mask, but he's yelling. Like, you're a superhero, and you should have, like, a superhero tone. Like, you know, there's Bruce Wayne, and then there's Batman talking, right? There's the difference.
Where are the drugs?
And even as bad as that may seem or laughable for some people, you're like, okay, you have the superhero switch. For me, I thought that Peter Parker spoke like this, and then Spider-Man just for some reason needed to speak louder because I had a mask.
Yeah, you're 100% right about
that. You're going down, Gobby.
Exactly. And it's like, you realize there's a boom microphone probably above you, so you can enunciate, or you're a damn superhero, man. Like, freaking act like it. And that took me out of it, because in the most heroic moments of the movie, or in the moments where this is your chance to stand up, you just talk louder. And that seemed like another level of awkwardness. You doubled down on that.
Yeah.
But nothing will beat Batman.
I'll say one thing, just like the biggest thing for me about this movie is how, like, going back and watching this, you're like, man, the superhero movies of today, as fantastical as they can get, they feel like grounded in a lot of ways, where this movie felt so cartoony in a lot of ways, of like, oh, like the bad guys, like the people that are attacking Mary Jane, like they need six guys coming out of the woodwork just to rob this one girl. Yeah. And it's so like it just didn't feel like a crime that would actually happen in modern New York. Or just like when Spider-Man's taking pictures, like the photography stuff, where it's like, they're robbing the bank truck again. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
These things are not things you see in everyday New York. Yes, there's crime, but it just felt very cartoony, comic booky. And I know it's a comic book movie, but to see, like, I think the influence of the Nolan Batman movies of grounding a lot of these movies, you know, this is before that.
Yeah, I have the perfect example of what you're talking about. And don't get me wrong, I think this is great in the dumbest way possible. And it's a gift that this movie gave me that I didn't realize I needed in my life. But it's that moment when Willem Dafoe, who's playing Norman Osborn, like inhales the green mist stuff, and then he just jumps up and he's like,
yeah, right? Oh my God.
Why? Like, you would never see that ever.
He's like a gargoyle, like crouched up and then leaps.
Exactly, like knees are bent at 45 degrees and he's like, hey, I'm the Green Goblin. It was so stupid and so over the top, but God, it was the best.
Yeah. God bless Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. So you brought that up. So now, you know, we've talked about the fact that there's the origin story. He becomes Spider-Man, gets the abilities. You know, there's the relationship with the aunt and uncle. But then we have additional members of the cast. So, you know, we have Mary Jane being played by Kirsten Dunst. And I feel like her, people definitely associate, when you think of Mary Jane, you think of her. I think they picked a great person to play that role. And then James Franco, which is, it's weird knowing it's who so James weird. Franco is now.
Yeah.
And like this
it's humble, not a role you would picture him in today.
Right? It's just so weird. But he does a great job. I mean, he's a tremendous actor, but he almost seems like he is miscast because you know the acting abilities he has, yet here he's kind of just like a whatever, you know, a overly sheltered son. Then you have Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, I would extend this to the entire Osborne family in that movie, because Willem Dafoe plays Norman Osborn, and if you told me that Willem Dafoe plays the Green Goblin, I would look at you like you're crazy.
Nah, I could see it, though. He's just got that goblin-like face. Why, because
he looks like a goblin?
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, man, you have the weird face, so can you play the bad guy in the movie? He's so good, though. He's so good, though, but then I think the most natural cast choice, J.K. Simmons is Jameson. I mean,
yeah, he steals you can the talk show. About, he steals the damn yeah. show.
He is like what Samuel Jackson is to Nick Fury. J.K. Simmons is to Jameson. Nobody else can play that role. They've tried it, and it's cute when some other people try. It's like, hey, look at you trying to be. No, this actor is that character.
He's the cartoon character, like the J. Jonah Jameson from the Spider-Man 90s cartoon is that man.
Exactly. So talking about the main bad guy, who's Norman Osborn. So he's got the company, it much like Tony Stark, except, you know, things go down south. He's wanting to do a lot of experiments. People don't really support him, so he decides to experiment on himself. And then exactly, he all of a sudden becomes a bad guy because experiments make you a bad guy and kill your teammate. So this entire movie, there's like an element of a two-faced character. You know, first, he acts like he didn't know anything about what happened. But then sometimes you hear the Green Goblin laugh, which reminds me of the bad guy from Home Alone, like the black and white movies, like the laugh. It totally reminded me of that. And I could never forget it once I got that image in my head. It was pretty much the same thing, once you think about it. But what do you guys think about this? This was the one part of the movie for me where everything is very grounded, like Ryan mentioned, but because they randomly have the laugh go on, but then he doesn't know what's happening. It's like, I would have tripled down on that part. Like, be super psychotic, but then here's the super normal guy that's desperate because he's about to lose this company. But then here's Green Goblin that really only shows up for a few minutes as a whole in the film. And I feel like that was really wasted potential, knowing how great of an actor Willem Dafoe is.
Green Goblin is an interesting scenario because, yeah, it's like flying on the glider and throwing these bombs. It's so cartoony. And the fact that he's wearing that mask, whenever he's talking, you just see that like open mouth. So especially in that scene he has with Spider-Man where he's knocked out and he's talking to him, it's just, he's not the most intimidating villain when he's like leaning on the side of that like little tower thing and just casually chatting with Spider-Man and doesn't even bother to demask him to figure out who he is. Like, I know he's making a deal with him, trying to get him to join him, but you'd think he'd still just like unmask him.
It's insurance, like, right?
I guess so. Maybe it's to gain some trust that, hey, I'm not going to unmask you. Willem Dafoe, I thought, did a great job at the Harry Osborn, like when he's looking in the mirror and kind of like battling with that other side of him. And, you know, the scenes at like Thanksgiving between him and Peter Parker, I thought that was very well done. But again, yeah, the cartooniness, the over-the-topness, it's just going to be a theme throughout this where it's like, it's a lot of it is laughable now, but for what it is, it's still very watchable.
Mm-hmm. I think this is the part of Spider-Man where they just kind of, they did what they had to make it work. Because if you look at all of the superhero villains throughout history with the big superheroes, Spider-Man really has the most comical villains or the most over the top. Like, who do you pick? The man that throws pumpkin bombs, the octopus man, the man made out of sand, or maybe the man that's a human rhino? You eventually just kind of have to cut your losses and do what you have to do with them. And I think that's where it, like, this is why that feels so over the top, but they did good with it.
I think that sort of goes back to the topic of tone, where maybe Sam Raimi had this idea of, wow, I want to tell this real story of Spider-Man, of how Peter Parker became Spider-Man. But then, like you mentioned, it's like, on the flip side, the villains are super outrageous. So if you try to tell like such a realistic thing, when it's time to introduce the villains, it's just super weird. And I think that overall, with the exception of the third one, they did a pretty good job of introducing them with what they had. It's like, hey, Green Goblin, it kind of had the Batman effect where you have this outfit that it can't portray any emotions. And I think that's the biggest problem with Green Goblin, because, you know, even in the later Spider-Man outfits, and you look at a character like Deadpool, right, who's wearing a mask, but it's super expressive. The fact that you have this non-moving mask just means that you literally have this hell of a five-star actor behind that mask, and you're doing nothing with them. You're just wasting opportunities with them. And I think that's why I saw this movie, and I just kept thinking to myself, it's okay. It's not a bad movie. I think I definitely liked it a lot more growing up, and I think I liked the second one more than the first one. And we'll be talking about that next month. But are there any other characters or little things that you knew were first introduced in this movie, whether it be Harry Osborn? You know, this is not going to be the last that we see of him, whether it be Mary Jane. Is there anything else that really stuck out for you in this movie, whether it be bad or good?
That kind of goes into why I appreciated the Green Goblin being the villain there, because knowing that this is a trilogy, it's leading into Harry Osborn as a villain in the second one, I think it worked quite well, where you can get the, it kind of finishes off.
Well, Harry's the third one, I think, right?
Is he?
Isn't it?
Because we have Topher Grace, which is so weird to think about in the third one.
I thought Harry Osborn showed up in the third one as the villain.
Well, I'll have to look this up because I don't remember it, but I thought it was Dr. Octopus and the Hobgoblin in 3, because wasn't it?
I think it's just Doc Ock in the second one.
So it's Venom and Harry?
They do Venom, Sandman, and Hobgoblin.
Oh, okay. Okay, so yeah, it must have been 3. Never mind then. Anyway, the point stands where it's still a good leading into these
they
later
lay the
movies.
Groundwork.
Yeah, they lay the groundwork well, and you had to do that with the Green Goblin.
And I think that's one of the biggest reasons we decided to do this whole movie trilogy review, because when you look at an individual movie, because we aren't going to be not giving these like a 1 out of 10.
Clearly, we
like
need
that,
a
right?
refresher.
Yeah. No, and it's not just that. It's like, it's fun to be like, okay, so this is a standalone movie. Like, as that, does it hold up, right? But then you also have the flip side, which is this is also the beginning of something, right? So this is the evolution. So with the second one, you want more of the actors. You also want improved, you know, visual effects and actions, which is the other thing that I wanted to talk about. Going back to my topic of visual effects, what did you think about the action in this movie? Because for me, I thought it was perfectly okay. But if you told me, hey, bring up your favorite action scene of this movie, I don't have a single one.
Yeah, it would probably be Spider-Man versus Randy Savage would be my favorite one.
Yeah, I would agree with you, actually.
I think perfectly okay is the best way to describe it. And in my opinion, it's because of when it was made. Like, they were getting there with CGI, but I don't know if they were at the level that they needed to be.
The climbing just, part. The climbing yeah, part. Holy crap, exactly. That looked awful. When it was time to get revenge and things like that. That in no way looked real, and that really brought it out. That took me away from
the
experience.
I think definitely when Green Goblin's on his like flyer thing at the parade, it looked not that great, and then the floats in the parade looked very not real. And also when Mary Jane is on the balcony, the way the balcony collapsed reminds me of like when you're at like, you know, Universal Studios or something, and you're in like the earthquake ride and you see like the part of the building that's supposed to like come apart. It just like looks like it's built to come apart and then come back together.
Yeah.
I don't know how, like, that balcony has always bothered me for some reason. But yeah, like they're not horrible. They're definitely serviceable, but a few instances you're kind of like, ooh.
So what would you say is your favorite part of the movie, whether it be the part with the uncle, whether it be with Bonesaw, but is there anything else additional that you definitely got something great out of rewatching this movie?
I mean, there's the part with Willem Dafoe in the goblin stance that will be with me forever. I will carry that one to my grave. I love it so much. But non-jokingly, I think the stuff with Uncle Ben is my favorite part of this movie.
From the Bonesaw part to the Uncle Ben thing, that's like
solid
the best
start.
Sequence. Yeah, it's best sequence right there.
Really? And just because it had so much weight, and as the movie got like went on and it was more drama-based, that's where it started to feel cheesy. It kind of lost me as the movie went on, but that start was just so good, and just everything with Uncle Ben, even though he's on screen for like a grand total of 10 minutes, you really connect with him as just that friendly, great guy, always looking after Peter, uncle. Even when Peter Parker ditched him, it was just kind of like, oh, we're gonna let this go, and then all of a sudden, boom, he's dead, and you feel for Peter there. I just think they executed that perfectly.
He's one of the good uncles. He's not one of them creepy uncles, you know?
That's true.
He's one of the good ones.
Something you kind of reminded me of this, Keith. I thought that one of the biggest things... No. We can talk about that another day. But this reminded me of the first Star Wars movie in the prequels, Phantom Menace. Like, I'll never forget when... Why are you looking at me like that, Keith?
Anything that reminds you of the Phantom Menace does not sound like a good thing.
No, that's what I was talking about. Because
he just liked Peter Parker's midichlorian count.
Yeah.
God damn it.
But when you have this whole thing between Mary Jane and Tobey Maguire, Peter Parker, I should talk about the character, but it reminded me a lot of like the Anakin, like the awkward conversations that flowed in like the first, you know, the prequel trilogy.
Said that she looked like an angel or whatever.
Yeah.
Which isn't that exactly what he says?
Yes. Oh, God, you're right.
Oh, that was
it's
super
those
cringe.
Things. Like
that
the whole time
cringe.
That I was watching the movie, I was like, it's reminding me of something, but I can't pinpoint it. And the moment that I got it, I'm like, right, because I think that the biggest reason that that chemistry between Peter Parker and Mary Jane doesn't work is because they're acting like a theatrical play. It's like this, like, oh, I'm doing so good. It's like, how come everything else is like super down to earth with like Uncle Ben and everything else? But then this is like super, like, overly smiley. Oh, you're and a great actress. You're like, doing it.
He's saying all this stuff to her, like, when at the hospital when Aunt May is there and he's like sitting down, just like basically confessing his love to her in a very awkward way. It's just like, who would do that? And I feel like most girls would be pretty creeped out. Yeah,
who would do that in a hospital? Like, that's a terrible place to get your game on.
Sick. She's in a bed and she is hurt and you're sitting there.
Never mind the past. Let's look at the future.
You're sitting there working game on some girl. Like,
yeah, because even at the end of the movie, she says to him,
at least take it outside the room, Jesus.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, boundaries. But even at the end of the movie, she tells him, which made no sense to me, "You've always been there for me." I'm like, no.
You
actually
didn't even notice him.
At the beginning of the movie, he's like going over, "Hey, I've been your neighbor this whole time." And then at the end of the movie, "You've always been there for me, Peter Parker." And then the freaking guy goes, "That's why I'll always be your friend." It's like, damn.
And then he friend zones her.
Boom.
Damn. What a twist. But it does, I mean, that part does make sense in the context, but...
It does make sense, but it's like, I never felt the chemistry between them, and I know that definitely improves in the second one.
Yeah, it definitely gets better.
But the relationship of, like, the friendship, let's talk about, like, I feel like the friendship never seemed genuine between them, and I don't know if it was a script writing situation, because, yeah, the dialogue was cringy. Like, forget about the fact that it was Tobey Maguire saying it. I just think he didn't do any favors with it, right? But is there anything about the movie that just kind of made you go, why? So this doesn't hold up in 2019. This shouldn't be there in the first place.
You ever hear that Nickelback song that this movie was based off of?
That was only in the credits, though, right?
That's true. I remember it from the DVD, just watching that music video. But that's a giant why.
I got another one in my notes here, and that was definitely the science field trip was a little on the nose with some of the stuff, and like, oh, you know, the radioactive like spiders were experimenting on. Oh, and there was a line that I wish I remembered. The scientist lady like says some
spider sense.
That was it. I was like,
it's like, foreshadowing. That's gonna happen. I think that entire part was cringy, because even when Peter's like taking, this is how low effort that scene was. And once I figured this out, I can knock it out of my head. So Peter's taking photos of Mary Jane, right? So they overlay like a photograph.
For an awkwardly long time too. Like, how many pictures do you need, man? How many pictures do you need?
No
but
kidding.
Then she's supposed to be looking at him, but she's looking off camera because they just overlay like a camera effect on the screen, but she's not actually looking at the camera. So it's like this like soft porn thing going on. I'm like, where's this going? Or are they going into the hotel room afterwards? This is...
What about when after he was bitten, the screen behind him, it's like new species created.
Oh god, yeah, and then it just fills in. Oh, that was super cringe.
I feel like they've definitely gotten a lot better with this, and we really can't hold it against this movie, at least I can't, because there is no reference. Like, yeah, we had the Batman movies, but even those, you saw that was a roller coaster on the DC side. You definitely had a lot of great things in the animated side. I mean, I think that the Spider-Man series, Batman, Superman, whether it be DC or Marvel, they definitely had that down. But I think it became a contest of who can really deliver the best movies. And even today, this is still an ongoing debate, because for every Spider-Man, you have a Justice League on the flip side. For every
between Marvel and DC, it is not an argument who does the better movies.
DC's trying.
They're trying. Giving it their all. It's cute. It's real cute.
Hey, Shazam was good. They finally did something right.
Yeah, that's true.
But that is very true.
Compared to the superhero movies of today, it's honestly one of the things that I struggled most with going back and watching this movie, because I still think this is a good movie, But because superhero movies have just evolved and improved so, so much since the time that this movie was made, I don't know if I can recommend it, even though I love it so much. Just because of all of the leaps and bounds that superhero movies have taken, it kind of leaves this movie in the dust, minus the whole, hey, you need to know Spider-Man's origin story, here's the first 20 minutes. But even a bad Marvel movie these days, I would say, is better than Spider-Man, even though I love this movie.
So, question, Keith, because you sort of brought this up at the beginning. You mentioned that when you think about Spider-Man, you do identify Tobey Maguire, whether because he was the first one or something. So, do you see Tobey Maguire and the Spider-Man films as one as a whole? Or do you see Tobey Maguire like, hey, this is a great guy that did a great job playing Spider-Man, and it's just the overall movie that was kind of like not so great to recommend now?
I think it's more of a generational thing where this was my Spider-Man. I guess the best example would be how some people have, even though there's been 20 Batman since, Adam West is still their Batman because they grew up with the cartoon. And I would imagine that's mostly why I connect with Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man. And hey, he did a great job. He did a great job in the first one. As we go on and on, it becomes a little more eye-rollier. Like now going back, I would recommend this with a little bit of an eye roll. But by the time we get to Spider-Man 3, my eyes are going to leave their sockets by how hard I eye roll, I imagine, because I have fond memories of this movie and I don't know if it holds up. I do not have fond memories of Spider-Man 3, so I can't imagine what that's going to be like.
Ryan, I just can't wait because you and I think that out of the three of us have really talked about cringiness for this movie. I mean, damn, when we get to that. Yeah.
I just have these vivid memories of that scene where Peter Parker becomes quote unquote cool with Venom.
We'll get there.
You gotta leave it in
even
for the
thinking
podcast,
about
Keith.
It now, I just want to rip my eye sockets
out. Build that one up.
You got 3 months, man.
Yeah. All right. You don't want to, don't shoot your web quite yet. All right.
Exactly.
I'm tickling the web shooter right now.
Yeah, I just got a mental image that I will never get out of my head.
But I think in a lot of aspects, I agree with Keith that going back and watching this, I can't say that I would recommend it because, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, Keith talks about Tobey Maguire was his Spider-Man. That's what he grew up with. And I felt the same way until I saw Spider-Man Homecoming, which is one of the greatest superhero movies of all time. And now it's like, yeah, okay. I'm all aboard the Tom Holland train. Like, he is my Spider-Man. I think, like, I'm able to recognize, like, they did this movie in a much better way. And now it's just like, in my head, Tom Holland is Spider-Man. Because what this movie did very well is the, you know, sort of the mission statement of Spider-Man and the great power comes great responsibility. But one thing that I felt was missing is really that, you know, the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man of being that kid, but who's still a kid in high school. And even though they do focus on school a little bit in this, the aspect of being a kid and dealing with this is something that they handled much better in those Spider-Man movies. And I think they got everything well and good in the newer ones. And yes, we're missing the origin story. So if you are really curious and you want to see that done in an effective way, that's probably the one reason to come back to this movie. And also to watch Willem Dafoe die in a very hilarious way where he's like, don't tell Harry. Yeah, that was beautiful and hilarious. But yeah, other than those two things, I think you could give this a skip and just maybe just watch the origin part. Watch the Bonesaw to the death of Uncle Ben and then just start Homecoming up. And
that
you're
is the worst movie. It just ends with like your uncle dies, roll the credits.
You're like, you know that scene where just tears are running down Tobey Maguire's cheek? Just stop it there. And then put on Homecoming.
I really hope somebody's edited the entire movie for it to end after that. But going off of what Ryan just said, I agree 500%. Where I think what this movie did great, but it executed poorly, is they had the chess pieces, right? Like they got the board ready and they're like, we got Spider-Man, we got the entire cast. He's technically in school, but we're not going to really develop those relationships that, as you mentioned, Ryan, when you think about the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, there's that sense of connection with his friends in school, with Mary Jane, like with the other characters, like just so many other people, right? And here you have the placeholders, like Aunt May is somebody that I strongly disliked in this movie. It weirdly enough, because I felt no connection. Like when
you're
think
not
about
Superman,
it,
you know,
it's just like she didn't give a shit about him, really. And it sounds like the weirdest thing to say, but it was like the most superficial relationship.
She took her husband's death well, like almost too well.
Yeah, just
everything
one
about
scene.
It. Yeah, and then it's like from the way he just died, and then they just kind of hug, like, oh. Well, this happened, and now
it's
we're
like,
going to move on with our
lives.
Are
we really going to get a great like scene out of her, or are we just going to have a quiet scene where she hugs Peter Parker, you know?
Yeah.
And then everything about it is, it was this sense of being oblivious, you know? The big scene that I feel like we do need to bring up before we conclude the episode is that Thanksgiving looking scene with the, you know, the turkey. And this is when Norman first meets, you know, Mary Jane, but then you have Aunt May in there. So everybody's there, right? And this is your chance to see every character come into play. And I feel like this showed you that there's no connection with anybody in the movie because Aunt May just doesn't blend in with that scene when she goes like, Harry Osborn. I just wanted to super kick her because I'm like, shut up.
Jeez.
Shut up. Hey, you did not fit in this scene. You add nothing to the scene.
Also, Harry did stand up for Mary Jane and she still got pissed at him. Like, he was like, you're wrong about her. What more do you want him to say? And then all of a sudden, she's just like giving him crap. I don't know. I felt like she was a little out of line there.
Yeah. And then the other part in that scene that you definitely saw in the Tom Holland movies is the revelation of a father figure figuring out who Spider-Man is, right? And in this case, it was the bloody sleeve and then figuring that out. And I think those were the strengths of the movie, but they definitely didn't play them as much. So my question to you is, knowing that we're going to be reviewing Spider-Man 2 up next, how excited were you then for a Spider-Man sequel? And then how excited are you now to then knowing you're going to review that movie up next?
I remember being very excited for Spider-Man 2 because I was so into this movie that I just wanted more of it. And remembering what I remember of it, I'm excited to look back on it and see, like, going forward in this trilogy review, this is the bar, because I know Spider-Man 3 won't meet it, and I want to see how close to the bar Spider-Man 2 is, or if it exceeds it, because I don't remember enough about that movie to know one way or another. So I'm looking forward to it.
Spider-Man 2 I have seen the most, and I know well and good that it's widely regarded as the best of the three. But it has been a while since I've seen it, even though I've seen it a lot. So now with the context of the first movie and with having recently seen the newest Spider-Man movies, I'm excited to really, like, I feel like I'm going to have a really good gauge about where it really stands amongst these movies.
Totally.
So I'm very excited to cover Spider-Man 2.
So everybody, please reach out to us via social media on Twitter, @castofthepast, or email castofthepast@gmail.com. The Discord, acastofthepast.com/Discord. Let us know what you thought about this movie. And we want to thank Jesus316 from the Discord. He's not only the person that suggested we review the Spider-Man trilogy, he's the one that really brought us this idea of committing to 3-month sessions, right? Where for every month, we're going to review the trilogy. That doesn't mean that we're always going to be reviewing movie trilogies or sequels, but we want to make sure we tackle at least one, you know, movie trilogy per year. But something very cool, if you could read this, Ryan, under movie facts, when talking about the casting, especially, there's a name in there that we have to bring up about the possibilities of there were other actors considered for the role of Spider-Man before Tobey Maguire. So could you talk about that?
Yep. So Let's see. When casting the lead role of Peter Parker, Columbia initially seemed to be looking for a more classic leading man type, considering stars including Colin Farrell, Heath Ledger, Ewan McGregor, Scott Speedman, and Wes Bentley. Rami, on the other hand, wanted Tobey Maguire and eventually got his way after the star turned in some convincing screen tests. After an intense diet and exercise regimen to give him a superhero body, Maguire was ready for the part.
So we have to bring up the fact that Heath Ledger is among that bunch. And obviously, Heath Ledger, we don't see him now, you know, may he rest in peace, as we saw him in The Dark Knight, right? Like, this was still him doing other roles. But knowing the potential, you know, when he later played the Joker, do you think he would have made a good Spider-Man?
I don't know, to be honest. But I mean, he did a good Joker, so maybe. But Heath Ledger was a fairly beautiful man. And I don't know if it would have gotten Peter Parker, like the nerdiness of it, right? Same with Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, that was the thing of, like, I don't even know I don't know who Scott Speedman and Wes Bentley are, but...
Wrong all right, with cool. you.
All right, it's not just me. Let us know in the comments or tweet us. So, I think Tobey Maguire was a great choice. If you're going to cast people who don't look like they're in high school, at least cast someone who looks, like, younger and more... like more baby face, basically, as in literally having a baby face. Like Tobey Maguire definitely fits that of like seeming more kid-like, even though he's an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing that I had to mention here, because as I was watching this movie, I'm like, wait a minute, it came out in 2002. So that means that 9/11, you know, this movie was obviously filmed before that year. So certain parts of the movie did have to be refilmed due to the terrorist attacks, you know, to the Twin Towers and everything else, because the filming for this movie began in January 2001. So I think this is always going to be a tough time whenever we watch old movies, because so many movies had New York in some way, shape, or form, right? So it always begs the question of what did they remove? What did they replace? I don't think that we missed anything. Because really, they didn't make use of the scenery. If you think about this movie, it was fairly close-minded, all things.
There was surprisingly not like a lot of wide city shots, but that may have been due to having to cut a lot of that out and reshoots and stuff.
Exactly. So
I'm also curious if that's why they ended the movie on Spider-Man, like on the American flag. I'm guessing that may have played a part, just because... you know, with that being a very like sensitive time, I think like patriotism really like shot up just as a way of everyone kind of comforting each other. So it wouldn't surprise me that that was also something they added in just to end it on like a patriotic note, like Spider-Man on the American flag up on this tower looking all badass. So, I mean, it was a cool way to end it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But I had a lot of fun reviewing this movie. I think that it's always going to be interesting. Keith mentioned it in one of the previous episodes, where some trilogies definitely have the sequel where it's better. You know, you brought up Terminator, and I think that's always going to be like the key example, you know, between T1, 2, and 3. Even though there were movies after that, people still think about the original trilogy. You know, when you think about Star Wars, and we thought about Spider-Man and went, each one is very different for better or worse. And as time went by, you know, there's going to be the ultimate lead up of, we're finally going to get Venom. And yeah, later on, you know, we did get a standalone Venom movie.
Man, but they screwed up Venom.
Yeah. And that was a super big deal. But we'll be talking about that in Spider-Man 3 in just a couple of months, people. So up until next time, do not forget to hit that 5-star review on Stitcher, Venom, Apple Podcast, and Facebook. And while Keith thinks about Venom, we will be back with another exciting episode of A Cast.
To the
past.
It's okay, Keith.
Like, it's the coolest video, or not video game, comic book villain, and they screwed it up. They screwed it up twice.
Topher Grace, dude, that 70s show. When you think about Venom, you think about Eric.
Yeah, absolutely.
Foreplay, man.
God, I can't wait to review that movie.
No, I'm cutting that part out.